It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I'm joined by Dave Prentice, Adam Jones and Sam Carroll as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And for the last time this season, we preview a game, of course, Sunday's last game of the season at home to Bournemouth, 4 o'clock at Goodison. And of course, a huge game for Bournemouth, but obviously, nevertheless, still an important game for the Blues as they look to finish the season on a high and as high as possible. And that's where we'll start, Preno. How important is it that we finish this season with a victory? Because, of course, as we now know for certain, next season will begin on September the 12th, so a seven-week turnaround. But for momentum purposes and for everybody to go away for the next 4 or 5 weeks until pre-season kicks in, with a sense of optimism that for all the difficulties of this season, next season will be better.
Yeah, it's a really strange one, isn't it? Because it's been such a strange end to this season. But yeah, you want a victory because you want to go into the summer upbeat. You want a sense of confidence. And just contrast how we were feeling after that defeat at Wolves and that defeat, or that draw at home to Aston Villa. And there was like a flatness. There was a, oh God, here we go again. And then suddenly, the sense of optimism that was suddenly felt after that performance, that result at Sheffield United, it only takes one result to do that. And so if Everton can, sort of finish off with a home victory, it does give you that little bit of a sense of optimism taking it into the summer. You think of, sort of what may be for the season ahead. It's a strange one though, because there's no fans there. Normally, you expect that end of season farewell and you want to be entertained on the last day of the season. I remember all too well, was it the last time we had a home game for the final day of the season? The Southampton one, the Sam Allardyce one a couple of years ago. Wasn't the last game, was it? It was the final home game.
It
was so flat. It was so horrible. It was just a dreadful feeling and atmosphere. You don't want to end the season like that. You want to end it with a spring in your step. And Bournemouth have got something to play for, so that gives an edge to the game. Hopefully it'll put an edge on Everton's game, and it should be open. Bournemouth will come, and they need a win. A point's no good to them, so they'll come and have a go at Everton. So equally we should be able to find holes to have a go back. So yeah, I'm just hoping for a positive performance and a positive result that will make you feel a little bit happier going into the summer, definitely.
And Adam, of course, for all our well-documented troubles away from home, of course, at Goodison, we remain very, very strong. Haven't tasted defeat in the league there, of course, since November. The three league defeats only at Goodison. So how important is it on that front to cement that excellent form at Goodison with a win on the final day?
I think it's massive, isn't it? I think that's probably the highlight of the season so far, really, that our home form has been so good. And I think it may be highlighted even more with how poor and dreary the performance was against Aston Villa. We're coming up against a side in similar sort of troubles in Bournemouth this weekend. They're at the bottom end of the table for a reason. They've got something to fight for, as Preno says. They need a win to save themselves. Maybe even a win won't be enough to save themselves. They are dependent on all the results, of course. But they're going to be going gung-ho for the victory. But as Preno says, that should leave them open at the back, and there should be gaps for Everton to be able to exploit. And that didn't really happen against Aston Villa. We sat back a little bit too much and we let them control the game a little bit more. And that will have been really disappointing for Ancelotti, because, as you say, our home form under him has been fantastic on the whole. So, if we can finish on a similar high, get a win and be able to take that home form into next season, then we should be standing ourselves in good stead for the next campaign.
I think morally as well, that we have to, we're obliged to give a good performance, just for the other teams that are involved in the relegation fight. I can remember too many times in the past Everton teams limping into games like this. I'm thinking of the game at Sunderland where Newcastle, had an chance of going down, and we were just abysmal. We just rolled over and somehow allowed that Sam Allardyce record of never taking a team out of the Premier League to survive. And look how that bit us on the bum when he came back and managed us only 6 months later. And then a few years prior to that, when we were down at Southampton under the Walter Smith era, and again gave an absolutely abysmal performance. We've survived on the final day. I remember surviving on the final day as a result of other teams' performances. Chelsea, notably, who put in a really professional performance against Bolton 3 or 4 days before they played the European final, that effectively saved Everton's skins when we played Coventry in the last match. So, morally, I think, we owe it to the other teams, to Aston Villa and the other teams around there, to put in a performance against Bournemouth, apart from what we owe to our own supporters, just to for us bringing this there.
Well, how much in the last 3 to 4 months have we heard the phrase integrity of the competition? I do not doubt for 1 second that Carlo would allow or would even countenance a below par performance given his dressing down to the players post Wolves. So fully expecting Everton to be on it. Sam, we think our away form is atrocious, and it is. We've picked up 18 points on the road this season. Bournemouth is actually joint second worst. They've picked up 10 points away from home this season, and in this calendar year, haven't picked up a single point on the road. I mean, all roads point to them going down and us sending them there, doesn't it?
Well, when you put the stats out like that, all roads point to a 3-0 Bournemouth, don't it?
The way
we usually like to do things. But no, I think obviously you'd have to expect that we'd win it. Is Carlo still unbeaten at home? So that obviously we had that scare against Aston Villa where that did look like it would come to an end. But I think now what we have to show is kind of the opposite of what we showed against Sheffield United. Obviously Everton a far bigger club than Sheffield United, and we have far bigger aspirations than Sheffield United. But, they've undoubtedly had a better season than us, and it was a professional performance and do something. I think you wrote in your match verdict, Phil, to do something that Everton don't do very often, which is go and beat a team that's above you in the table. And, it wasn't a classic, and it wasn't a 90 minutes that I'll be watching back, probably, hopefully, ever again in my whole life, by any means. But, we got the win and we did what we needed to be done. We defended well. You can't understate the fact that you have an 18-year-old kid making his full Premier League debut at the back. And Richarlison, again, what a goal. But now I think what I'd really like to see on Sunday is last day of the season, let the chains off a little bit. I want to see Anthony Gordon, I want to see Moise Keane, and I want to see us have a go. And as horrible as it is, I want to see us send Bournemouth down, and that's no thingy on Bournemouth. It's just more that it's been a long time now since I've been excited by an Everton performance, maybe since the restart, only Leicester in patches, where maybe the first half against them. I'd love to see us win a game 2-3-4-0 and really take the game to them, and as you're saying now, it'd be the perfect time to do that with the dates being announced, to be able to sit here on Sunday, Monday and say, it was a great performance that yesterday, a few signs, and I can't wait until September. I don't want to dree the end of the season. A win is the minimum, but I'd hate to have another 1-0 scraper, like what we've seen against the likes of Norwich. I really want to see a bit of an exciting performance.
As I said before we started recording, we will look back at the season as a whole next week, and I'll be asking the lads for players of the season and goals of the season, all the usual stuff, and we'll go into that in some depth. But Pren, I'll start with you. I'm interested to know, is there a player on Sunday that you think, for maybe perceptions, maybe for momentum, maybe for the to give the manager food for thought, is there a player on Sunday at Goodison that really needs to put a performance in that makes a statement?
There is. I mean, can I throw another category into there as well? Sentimental reasons. Mm. Leighton Baines. We still don't know what his ultimate decision is going to be. But the fact that he hasn't, you know, sort of announced anything, yes, makes me think that maybe the end is looming. And if so, I'd like him to say a farewell, even though there are no fans in there. I know it sounds a bit weird, but, you know, I'd like to see him, you know, play some part in the game.
Yes.
But as far as somebody having to make a statement and impress the manager, Moyes Keane, I just haven't seen enough from him to warrant, you know, the optimism and the reputation that he came with. And that's, you know, he's not been given a great deal of time on the pitch, we know. And presumably that's because he's not shown much on the training field. Otherwise, we would be seeing more of him. Jarrad Branthwaite is a given. You know, you want to see him start and you want to see him build on the promise he's shown already. But I don't think he's got anything to prove. But, you know, he's such a young lad who's only just broken into the team. I think Moyes Keane does have a lot to prove. And I hope that, you know, maybe he gets an opportunity from the start this time and gives a performance, you know, that indicates that, yeah, you know, so it is something to get excited about. I mean, quite who you would rest, I don't know. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, you know, you feel hard about resting a player like him, given he gives so much every single game. But he's had a difficult period, and, you know, we know all about Calvert-Lewin. We know what he can produce. Moyes Keane, we're not so sure about. So, yeah, he's the player that I think has an awful lot to prove to A, the supporters, and B, the manager.
It's a good job that Carlo is the king of man management, because I would not relish telling either Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison tied on 13 league goals for the season that one of them's getting rested. But
exactly.
As you say, the manager has hinted that Moyes may get a start, but we shall see. Adam, same question to you, mate. You know, is there a player on Sunday, if given an opportunity, either from the start or off the bench, that really needs to leave us with a perhaps a different impression of them, or food for thought, and equally for the manager as well?
I find it hard to disagree with Preno initially. I think, you know, I've been banging this Moyes Keane drum, I think, since we've returned from lockdown. You know, the last time he started the Premier League match, he scored. So I just don't see why you wouldn't give him a chance from the start again and see if he can repeat that feat.
Man of the match as well, probably in most people's eyes that night as well.
Exactly. Like his performance was much more than just the goal, wasn't it? You know, I think that was quite clearly his best performance. I think he put in so much effort. You know, he had so much skill and intelligence about his performance on that day. And, you know, I'd really like to see him try and recreate that. But to give a bit of a different answer, I'd maybe say Bernard, because I think especially since lockdown, I just don't think we've seen enough of what we all wanted Bernard to be. You know, I think ever since he joined, you know, and I know he obviously joined with an injury, but, you know, ever since he joined, we've seen flashes of the kind of brilliance that he can show. You know, the ability to kind of almost single-handedly break defences down with, you know, a little bit of skill or, you know, an incisive pass. When he's on his game, I don't think there's anybody else in the Everton squad that can do the things that he can do, but I just don't think we've been seeing it enough, to be honest. And, you know, when we've got, you know, Everton probably, you know, we'll be looking for a left winger, but we're looking for a winger in the summer. You know, you've got Anthony Gordon, who's been playing, I think, much better on the left-hand side than Bernard since lockdown. I think Bernard, if he is given a chance, he's got to try and take it with both hands, to be honest, because, you know, otherwise he might just see himself fall a little bit further down the pecking order.
Just stick with your ad on that. Do you think that there's any question mark over Bernard's future? I know he's been linked with Roma, and I know he went on to his Instagram account. This was at some point during lockdown to really kind of strongly knock that idea down. But do you think there's question marks over whether actually, if there was an offer for Bernard, do you think the club would listen?
I think if we were in maybe a different situation, I would say yeah. But we're already looking at, you know, strengthening centre-back, right-back, right midfield, maybe up front as well. We've already got so many positions to try and sort out in such, you know, a short period of time, because we ideally want to get these players in before the start of next season so that they can settle in properly and we can have, you know, a kind of running start to the next campaign. So to try and get all, you know, those four positions sorted before the start of next season is already going to be tricky. I think if we were letting somebody like Bernard go, we'd have to find a replacement again. You know, as much as I like Anthony Gordon, is he going to be the player who's going to take you throughout the whole Premier League season in that position? I don't think he's maybe proven that yet. So I do still think there is a place for Bernard. And as I say, you know, when he's on his game, he can produce the kind of quality that we just don't see elsewhere in the Everton squad. But I think it's maybe an issue that we've seen across, you know, countless players in this squad, and it's maybe the problem that this squad faces as a whole. It's just consistency with him. We need to start seeing these kind of performances and effort levels on a consistent basis. And I think certainly since lockdown, we haven't really seen it enough. So if he's given the opportunity on this last game of the season, I think it could be a chance for him to make a real statement there the next term.
Sam, same question to you, mate.
I agree with that, but the more I've kind of watched Bernard over lockdown, I'm starting to worry a little bit about him. I thought when he first came into the team under Silva, he just had something different, you know. I think his quality on the ball is undoubted. And another thing I think that he has is decision-making. I think his football intelligence is probably the best that we've got in our team, probably along with Gylfi Sigurdsson. There's too many people for me who consistently make the wrong decisions on the ball. Mm. But I also feel that for where Everton want to be, is Bernard good enough on a consistent enough basis? No, probably not. And it's whether, you know, he has that time next season to prove himself under a manager like Ancelotti. And, you know, if he does have that quality, then Ancelotti is obviously the right man to get out of him. And obviously I'm sitting here talking about a lad who's played for Brazil at the World Cup, so it is a difficult one. But you just look at other teams and some of the wingers they've got, and, you know, I just don't think it's a Bernard. Sometime, you know, if Everton are going to look for a winger who can play on the right, you know, predominant left footers and cut inside, you know, that's kind of what we hoped for from Bernard on the opposite flank, really. And he did show it in spells, but just hasn't quite brought it to the table. So, you know, at the end of the day, the way I always think about these things when you ask these questions is, you know, if Bernard, say, you know, did join Roma or did join someone else this summer, would we all be sitting here gutted? Would we all be sitting here disappointed? No, probably not. And I think that probably tells you a lot, really, doesn't it?
Mm, so just staying with you, pal, is there a different player from the ones we've mentioned that you feel needs to put an 8 or a 9 out of 10 performances on Sunday?
The whole team, maybe. to be honest, no, I think that there's a few players in there. If Iwobi starts, I'd like to see the good Alex Iwobi that we've seen in flashes, you know, the impressive Alex Iwobi. I think, you know, every 90 minutes he plays seems to be a cross of the good, the bad and the ugly, doesn't it, really? I'd like to see a consistent performance from him. I'd like to see Anthony Gordon come back into the team because of how impressive he's been, you know, and the hard work he put in lockdown really paying off for him. I'd like to, as Adam said, I want to see Moise Keane play. At the same time, I want to see Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin play to see who can hopefully notch ahead in that little goal competition, the friendly goal competition they've created between themselves. So there's a few, really. But I think that's what's a nice thing about it. It's the last day of the season, but I think every single lad putting on a shirt and playing has got a little bit of a point to prove, because there's no one really in this squad at the moment who is 100% safe, I wouldn't say, apart from, you know, your Dean, your Richarlison, and maybe a couple of others. So every single player's got something to prove, and every single player needs to be an 8 out of 9, and maybe even Tom Davis as well. You know, Carlo's given them a run in the team pretty much throughout the last stage of this campaign, and I don't think he's totally convinced anyone at this point. So, you know, it's been another difficult campaign for Tom, and it'd be nice to see him, you know, another one like Iwobi, who's shown it in flashes, but his game does seem to range from each extreme, seemingly minute to minute. So a nice composed performance from him. You know, a team in the relegation zone, you'd expect a young central midfielder like him to really be able to build on the back of an energetic performance against Sheffield United and try and dominate and maybe just clean up a little bit on the ball and be a bit tidier at times, because I think that's what I want to see from him next season.
No, I think Sam's right there, isn't it? We probably could have picked two players each, couldn't we? You know, I would have said that I think we would just want to see a sort of faultless, composed and clean performance from Pickford. I think that would help everybody. And I think maybe on the back of a very, very good performance against Sheffield United and an encouraging final 10 against Villa, I think a good performance from Andre Gomes on Sunday will be big, not only in game but I think for him as well and going into next season. Preno, Carlo in his press conference talked about next season. Well, the summer will help an evolution of the club, and you say next season there will be better quality, better ambition, better motivation, and more passion. What did you, what did you make of that? And you know, is that maybe perhaps for the first time, perhaps even though he maybe didn't mean it deliberately, an indication of actually, you know, he's listed a number of things there that he's clearly not happy with. Maybe an indication of the scale of the job at hand.
Yeah, it was very heartening to hear, and it's if not quite sort of a cavalry charge call, it was a firm declaration of intent. And let's face it, we've been here so many times before where we've gone into a summer and we're thinking, right, you know, so next season has to be better, and more often than not it hasn't been. So we haven't built on progress of the previous season, and as a result we've seen far too many managerial changes and managerial upheaval. I think now, you know, pretty much the entire fan base, and I've seen a couple of little absolutely nonsensical murmurings about Carlo Ancelotti's position among some supporters. I think that's just social media for you. But I think the vast majority of the Everton fan base believe that we have got an absolute A-list manager who is capable of evolving the football club and, completing a fairly significant evolution. It was good to hear him say, what he said. And if he can make good, on that promise and change each of those elements in the side, we will see a much better season. Because let's face it, finishing where we're going to finish in the Premier League table is simply not good enough. When you look at the number of players, that we've brought into the squad in recent years, you look at the vast amounts of money that have been spent on that squad, it isn't good enough. And it needs a manager who's got the opportunity to spend time building what he wants to build. We all have faith in the manager. Clearly, the boardroom does. So they need to allow him now to take that time to get things right the way he wants to get it right. He's obviously stated publicly today what he wants to improve, immediately. And I'm quite heartened. You feel like a little sense of cynicism sometimes because, you've heard these kind of things so many times before, but we haven't heard them from a manager as accomplished as Carlo Ancelotti, who's achieved what Carlo Ancelotti's achieved in football. So, yeah, I'm optimistic. So I was pleased to hear him say that, and I want to see him make good on those promises now.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And Adam, of course, we knew obviously after Monday night, of course, the highest we can finish now going into the final game of the season is where we are currently, which is 11th. The lowest we can finish is 12th. So it will be the lowest league position, obviously, since the end of 2016, wasn't it, when Martinez was fired and Unzi took charge for the final game of the season. These are unusual waters for Carlo Ancelotti, aren't they? He doesn't finish in bottom halves of tables.
Yeah, and I think that was the interesting thing when he took over, wasn't it? You were thinking this just isn't the kind of project that you usually see Carlo Ancelotti link with. I think at the time he took over, we knew it was going to be a long term sort of rebuild that was going to be on his hands, and he had that that massive upturn in form when he first joined, and it kind of reverted back to type for this season by the end, and we've ended up where we are, which is obviously very disappointing. But I think at the same time, as Preno said, I think he's hit the nail on the head there, that we might have heard these kind of comments from managers in the past saying that they want to evolve the Everton squad, and it's all well and good, but I think they carry so much more weight when it's a manager like Carlo Ancelotti saying it. As you say, he's got the experience of winning so many things across so many different countries across the continent. And, that kind of experience brings with it, this certain kind of gravitas whenever he speaks about matters such as this one. He very clearly knows what he's talking about. And as he said, he's very clear on what he wants to see from the side next season. More passion, more motivation. That is exactly what we need to see from Everton next term. So, I can only agree with Preno, really, that these are hugely exciting time when you hear Carlo Ancelotti saying something like that. And I've seen, you know, a lot of supporters talking about revolution rather than evolution. And I think, you know, I think Carlo chose his word quite cleverly there, because it is going to be a long-term thing. You know, he does need to evolve the players that we currently have here, because we've said it so many times across this podcast over the last few weeks and months. It's just not the time to be ripping up the squad from its foundations and to try and rebuild from the ground up. You just can't be doing that in the situation that we're in. So it is up to Ancelotti to try and develop and, as he said, evolve some of the players that we have here to, you know, produce something better. So yeah, I'm very excited for the future, certainly.
Sam, Carlo obviously revealing in the press conference today that at some point next week he will meet the board. Obviously, we don't know whether that's virtually or in person, of course, but he says he will meet with the board and to discuss and finalise transfer plans for the summer. Given, obviously, that the season will start in 7 weeks, what do you hope comes from that meeting?
I think it's got to be a clear culmination of what we have a director of football and a scouting team for, doesn't it? I mean, these lads are away, Marcel and his team and Greta Steinsen are working all season long, you know, to make sure that when this time comes, they're in a position to have clear ideas on who they want to sign. And Carlo Ancelotti is obviously, you know, a legend of the game who have his own ideas and to meet in the middle. So, you know, one of the most frustrating things about supporting Everton is always seemingly why does everything take us a little bit longer to get deals over the line? You know, one of the hallmarks of the clubs above us, you know, you look at Chelsea with Werner this summer and Ziyech, and, you know, Liverpool have been quite good at doing it over the last couple of years. You know, you look at the Fabinho transfer, for example, you know, it just happens. There's not a lot of talk. Everton always seems to be a kind of protracted, drawn-out thing. And I think it frustrates supporters. And me and Adam were talking about it the other night. You know, you forget the Jibaman and Keane, you know, didn't even feature really in pre-season last summer because of how late they were signed. So I hope this meeting, you know, 1 week after the season's finished, you know, we can identify, you know, the 2, 3, 4, 14 players that we're going to sign and have those ideas clearly and get things moving nice and quick. You know, it's only a short turnaround this summer and I want players to be there for the start of pre-season to kind of negate all this messing around that we usually have, because it just can't impact in a positive way to have all the talk and all the surroundings and not be able to get, you know, acquainted with Finch Farm and your teammates and stuff like that, like what we had last summer. So, yeah, hopefully next week they come out of it. We know where we stand. We know what deals we're going to be hopefully concluding in the very near future. And we can start cracking on and really start to get an idea of what Everton is going to look like, both in terms of summons and outgoings.
Pran, I know anybody listening to this would be wholeheartedly in agreement with Sam, and I know Adam's written about it and Michael Ball written about it in his column. But on the flip side, to try to get business done early, I mean, I can think of only in sort of one example of recent history would be obviously the summer of 2017, where we were ambitiously went on a bit of a spending spree, didn't we? A record spending spree, and we were paying for certain players the asking price and getting deals done early. But is the issue actually because of where we are in the transfer food chain? We aren't Champions League team. We aren't, you know, I think Sam mentioned Chelsea, Liverpool, and you look at the big clubs in European football, they can go and get their business done earlier because A, they've probably got the finance and resource to get those deals done. And also, if one of the big boys are interested in you, you don't have as much of a decision to make. Whereas, would it be fair to say, actually, we're probably scrapping with 3 or 4 other teams for these players? Hence why it can take longer.
Well, exactly, yeah. And as we've seen already with, you know, sort of disappointments in the transfer market already, with some players preferring to move to Tottenham and, you know, London rather than coming north to Merseyside. It's difficult. I mean, obviously, we've got the reputation of the manager, which counts for an awful lot. But European football counts for even more. And Champions League football, you know, is the absolute, you know, top table that all players want to be dining at, certainly top players. So it is difficult. We're going to have to try and find the kind of players like the Garner Gay kind of signing, you know, so $7.5 million from Aston Villa. That flew under the radar a little bit and became, you know, an absolute star. We need a couple more players like that. And obviously the financial position of the club dictates that as well, because we still need to move players on. You know, as much as we want to see new faces arrive, we've got to trim that wage bill. We've got to try and lose some of the players that, you know, just aren't
absolutely
being used. So, you know, it's going to be, again, it's a story we've said so many times before, another important summer in the transfer window. But it is going to be both, you know, sort of incomings and outgoings. But I think the word that Carlo used at the press conference, you know, so evolution, I think he chose very, very carefully, because that suggests, you know, step by step, you know, not wholesale changes, because, you know, that can be counterproductive as much as productive when you start ripping the entire squad apart and starting from scratch. You've got to try and retain what is working. Admittedly, not a great deal's worked all that well this season.
Yeah.
And improve. You know, so in certain areas, he's identified the areas he wants to improve in. He'll, in those talks with the boardroom next week, he will tell them what's the priority, what we have to have to make the team even better, and then work on that. But yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be, you know, sort of a very, very intriguing summer to watch what happens. You know, as much as it's not been a great season, you know, sort of to watch on the pitch, off the pitch, this summer could be very, very interesting.
As I say, we'll review this this season in full next week, but it's probably worth casting our eye briefly towards next season, because we have been talking about how the squad will strengthen. What do we make of the two teams from the Championship, Adam, already confirmed as promoted? Leeds, of course, winning the title, and West Brom coming up with them. What about the prospect of locking horns with those two clubs again next season?
Personally, I'm quite looking forward to a game against Leeds. I was still only quite young when they got relegated, so I'm actually quite excited to see them back up in the Premier League again. I think their transfer window is going to be crucial for them, because obviously they've had Ben White doing so well for them. Will they be able to get him on a permanent basis?
Sounds very difficult from what Graham Potter was saying.
Exactly, doesn't it? So they're going to have to find some sort of replacement for him, and I think that's got to be a priority for them. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in the transfer window. I find it really hard to be excited about West Brom coming back up, to be honest. Sorry for it, with like a West Brom leaning listening, but like it is just getting a bit bored in this boing boing baggies thing, isn't it? I mean, are they actually going to be able to spend well enough and keep themselves up? I really wouldn't want to fathom a guess at this point, to be honest. And then, you know, out of the four teams in the playoffs as well, I think there's some very interesting prospects as well. Brentford perhaps coming up into the Premier League with their new stadium as well, which would be, you know, a very interesting kind of prospect. So, yeah, out of the promoted teams, I'm probably looking forward most to playing against Leeds, because obviously they are a club in terms of like English football history, aren't they? So to see them back in the Premier League again, I think personally it's quite nice.
Yeah. Sam, any thoughts on Leeds? I know we were speaking about it at the end of last week, you know, looking forward to seeing them back up and was playing them.
No, not really. I proper hate Leeds. To be honest with you, I would have been happy with them to stay down in League One. So hopefully we can play a part in sending them back down next season. I remember Rooney scored in the Ellen Rose when I was a kid. One of the best. Remember being in my nans. My dad had it on the radio, and don't even think I knew what was going on then. But I still just hated Leeds. I was just running around my nans. And the Steve Watson hat trick as well. Remember that at Goodison 4-0.
Yes.
I think Dunk got sent off in that one as well, so that was another good memory. But you know, obviously Elland Road, I've been to a couple of Leeds games in my time, and Elland Road does have a good atmosphere, so it'll be a boss away day. And obviously looking at some of the teams that are, you know, getting relegated this season, you know, we could ultimately send Bournemouth down. That's a bit of a slog. Watford could go down, you know, it's a trip to London and Norwich as well. So you know, Leeds is a brilliant away trip and one for us all to enjoy next season. So that's good. And, you know, I think as much as a dislike Leeds, you've got to like Bielsa as a man. Mm. And, you know, what a true kind of student and studier of the game he is. So, you know, respect to him. And that, it'll be funny to see the little thing that he sits on at Goodison next season as well. The Bielsa bin, the Bielsa bucket, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and so we're trying not to deviate too much, but I think it's probably just worth talking about because there's obviously a number of lads in the Wigan team, Preno, of course, who we knew from Everton days, Anthony Robinson, Joe Williams, obviously Kieran Dowell's been on loan. How much did you feel for Wigan the other night?
Oh, desperately. Know? I mean, Joe Williams didn't need to tweet something of himself almost in tears at the news. It was devastating because of the manner in which they've, you know, what they are likely to go down. I know they've got an appeal, you know, sort of process in place, but
yes,
barring that, it does look like they've been relegated in the most appalling circumstances. You know, they finished mid-table, you know, so they put a great run together, you know, so from the turn of the year, and you know, even to go to the last day, and you know, there was a spell on the last day when they were, you know, they were still safe. It really is absolutely heartbreaking. Yeah, felt for them massively. You know, it's just very, very sad to see that. And, you know, to reflect on what Sam was just saying there, Leeds is very much a double-edged sword them coming up, you know, because of Everton's dreadful record there. That Rooney goal he's talking about was the first time Everton had won a league game there since 1951. I know there's the FA Cup semi-final that, you know, sort of went spectacularly well, but in league games, it's just one of those grounds that we always seem to have bad luck at. But it's a good stadium, you know. It's a big football club. I mean, obviously, I'm old enough to remember Leeds, you know, winning all kinds in the 70s, 60s, and 70s. So, yeah, great football club. You want to see the big traditional established clubs like that in the Premier League. But equally, there's room for the slightly, you know, sort of quirkier, you know, sort of smaller clubs in inverted commas, which is why I'm sort of secretly rooting for Brentford in the playoffs. A little bit disappointed that their stadium, which famously has a pub on all four corners,
yes,
is going to be no more very soon. I'm going to be going into a brand spanking new one. But I have been to that stadium, but only to see Tranmere Rovers play, never to actually see an Everton team play. I know we have played there in League Cup competitions in the recent past, but I didn't get to go to that one. So yeah, I'd quite like to see them come up, and it's a decent London trip. So there's a lot of interest in the promotion and relegation scraps. So yeah, pluses and minuses, but you know, to go back full circle, Wigan desperately, desperately sad to see what happened to them, and you know, didn't deserve it at all. And yeah, there's so many links between Everton and Wigan down the years. So yeah, feel for them badly.
Sam, just a last one on this. You know, if we're talking about former Everton players who we felt for seeing their relegation, of course, you know, I think many people listening to the pod will understand your friendship with Matty Pennington, and obviously he's been at Hull, hasn't he? And obviously with Bowler as well, and their season really did nosedive, didn't it? And they obviously finished bottom. So that's tough on Matty and Josh.
I'm glad this one isn't getting filmed. My face here. I'm crying.
About to say Sam's face is an absolute picture. It's amazing.
Now, obviously, for you know, for people who don't know, to be mates with someone for, you know, 15, 20 years, and have to kind of watch them go through something like that is probably one of the most painful things that's happened to me, kind of in kind of this kind of football circle that you're in. You know, because people, you know, the 8-0 that happened against Wigan and stuff like that, you know, obviously from the outside, and you know, we're all guilty of it. You know, it's funny, isn't it? If you're not a Hull fan, if you're not rooting for Hull and things like that, but you know, to see the effect it does have on these people who you see make so many sacrifices and make so many kind of, you know, there's so many challenges that they face, and you know, even for to touch on Matty, to see him, you know, You move to Leeds, you're upright, you kind of move your life to Leeds for a year, and then, you know, you're down to Ipswich, and then you're down to Hull, you know, and it's tough. And I know people can turn around and go, the lads get paid, you know, a good amount of money, which they do, but, you know, these are still lads with families and girlfriends and things, and, you know, that it's been a horrible kind of second half of the year, you know, to put into context of Hull being 2 points outside the playoff positions on New Year's Day, you know, where Matty made his debut and was man of the match to obviously finish in bottom of the championship. It's a I think it's a capitulation that the Championship has never seen before, even in that league. It is a crazy league, but so tough. So hopefully, you know, Matty and Josh can become stronger from it. You know, Josh was one of the best players in the 23s last season when they done that.
Yeah,
double.
He was.
And Matty has, you know, obviously shown across his career that, you know, he'll make a career in this game. You know, he was one of Ipswich's player of the seasons last season. And, you know, he's had good spells at Tranmere and Coventry as well. I think he was young player of the season at Coventry. So, you know, but obviously for both of them, it's time to move on now and to get, like it is for so many lads, you know, Benny Beningame and Keaton Dahl himself, you know, it's time for them to go and find a permanent home and show how good they are, because, you know, we're getting to the age now of lads 23, 24, 25, and they need to move on and find their home, because you just feel sorry for them. And, you know, obviously people can say, you know, there's a lot of thing on social media. It's easy to turn around and say, oh, so-and-so's crap and so-and-so's this and so-and-so's that. But in truth, they're not, are they? These lads are going to have good careers, but Everton have got a duty now where I'd like to see maybe something similar that happened with Galloway last season. You know, even these lads who might have a year left on the contract, to just say, look, if someone comes in, we'll just save on the wages. You can go and we'll just call it a free transfer, because, you know, these lads have still given a lot to the club, you know, in terms of service coming up through the youth team, and hopefully they can all find good moves this summer.
Mm. As you wrote earlier in the week, Sam, club expected to be listening to offers for Nathan Broadhead, the reigning under-23s player of the year, of course, as well.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? With Nathan, obviously, Unzi's got a lot of time for Nathan, and that did show in the award he won last season. I think he kind of went under the radar a little bit. You know, a few other lads kind of were catching the eye as well. But Nathan, what I've always liked about him when I've seen him play left wing, right wing, I've seen him play in the 10 as a false 9, right midfield, left midfield, part of a midfield 3. And obviously Unzi does like to challenge the players and put them in different positions, as we've seen with basically every lad who's played in that under-23 position. But Nathan's a great lad, he works hard, he's got quality, and at the end of the day, you know, Ryan Giggs has already noticed him. He's trained at a senior Wales training camp alongside the likes of Gareth Bale and Adam Ramsey, which is no mean feat at his age. So, you know, and for his first loan, I thought he had a very, very solid year at Burton. You know, 22 appearances, 3 goals, 2 assists for a young lad. I think that's a decent return. So Everton now, again, I think doing the right thing in being open for offers, because it's time for him to spread his wings and be able to crack on. And to be honest, I think out of this current group, he's one that it wouldn't surprise me if we see him back in the Premier League in the next couple of years, because, you know, he's exciting. He wants to get on the front foot. He loves running the players. But he's also got a real work ethic, what's been drilled into him by Unzi as well. So if any Championship clubs are listening, then you could do worse than going for Nathan this summer, I'd say.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, chaps, we will leave it there, but of course finish with, for the final time this season, the predictions. Prano, how do you see Everton versus Bournemouth at Goodison on Sunday going?
The shackles are off. Bournemouth have got a pile forward looking for goals. That will leave gaps at the back that Everton will exploit. And I'm going to go all Sam Carroll on this one and go for a 4-1 Everton win.
Wow. Wow. Ad?
I think the potential absence of Nathan Ake could be key in this game. I think if Bournemouth are without him at the back, they're going to really struggle to keep the likes of Richarlison out from scoring. I'm not going to go as ambitious as Preno, but I am going to go for a clean sheet, so I'm going to go 2-0.
Yeah. Sam?
You know what? Preno's tried to out-carol me.
He's got to go 6-1 now, aren't
you? You know what? I'm actually totally confident of 5-0. And I thought before the podcast, I'm certain that we're going to absolutely annihilate them. So I'm going 5-0. Moise Keane, first goal, hitting the woe in front of the Gladys.
Well, that would be something. I'm with Adam. I think it would be slightly more modest, but I think it'd be 2-0. And I'd be fearful if I was the Bournemouth fans, given their away record and the strength of our our home record. Brilliant.
I think next season we should start keeping track of these predictions and maybe get a little league table going, because I think I must have got a lot of them nail on the head.
I was the only one to predict a win against Sheffield United. I got it.
Yeah, you'd be bottom of the table, Sam. You'd be relegated along with Matty.
Very good, chaps. Thank you very much for your company as always. Brilliant stuff. And hopefully you guys at home have enjoyed listening to us. As I said, next week we will review, obviously, the Bournemouth game and start some season reviews and really dig deep into the season that was, you know, two different permanent managers, a caretaker manager, and obviously some expectations, many, if not all expectations, sadly not met, but we will get stuck into that next week after the game. So stick with us over the weekend. Of course, all the best news, views and analysis of the final game of the season. But for now, you've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.